You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
This is Randy.
Randy, hey, this is John giving you a call back.
Oh, good. So, who do you work for?
I write for a newspaper called American Free Press. It's based.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's based out in Washington, D.C. And I actually drove up to Oregon. I live in California, and me and my friend, we drove up to Oregon to kind of check out what was going on. And I've been reading about it at least as much as I can and trying to get the full background story and really understand the bigger picture and what some of the issues are with the ranchers and the federal government, including the BLM. So I talked to Michael, and he was very helpful yesterday when I spoke with him. I talked to him for about 20 minutes or so. It was actually probably like 15 minutes. And he kind of answered just some basic, you know, background questions. But he said if I wanted to quote anyone or if I wanted to really get the, you know, talk to the proper man to, you know, to deal with these issues, he pointed me to you. So do you mind if we go through a couple questions here and I'll record it and just so I have a record of it to maybe quote you in the future?
Yeah, and I'm more than happy to do that. I will say that depending on how detailed you want to get into permitting and that, well, let's just go and see what I can answer.
Okay, yeah, if there's something that you can address, you know, I totally understand. I'm just looking for some basics to possibly confirm a few things. So I'm going to it's already recording, so we're already, I've already got the recording started. So just okay. To get started, Randy, could you tell us your last name and what your official title is with the BLM?
The last name is Eardley. It's E-A-R-D-L-E-Y. And I'd prefer to just be a spokesman for the BLM.
Okay, very good. Now, could you talk about the purpose of the BLM? What is its main function and role, specifically in Oregon and in Harney County, where this standoff is currently taking place?
Well, in Harney County and Oregon and every place that the BLM manages land, the role of the BLM is as a manager for the public. In other words, the BLM doesn't own the land. The public owns the land, and BLM merely manages it. Now,
I'm sorry, when you say public, are you specifically referring to the federal government? Because it is federal. You guys do manage the land that federal government owns, correct?
Yes.
Right,
but,
okay.
You know, if I may, this contention that these people need to take back the land for the people already own the land, and it's not owned by the BLM.
Okay.
It's owned by everyone. You, me, your family, my family. We all own that land. The BLM's role is that it exists just to manage that land. And the mission of the BLM is to manage it for multiple uses in a manner that is sustainable and conserves that land not only for current generations but future generations.
Okay.
And that, honestly, it does. BLM has found itself in, you know, when you manage it for multiple uses, there are some conflicting uses, and we try and balance those uses. But ultimately, the goal is to manage that land to be healthy and productive.
Okay.
If that helps.
Sure, yeah, no, that definitely does. Now, does the BLM or the federal government generally, is there a policy to actively seek out land, to actively acquire land from either other, you know, county government, local government, you know, that own land, or even private individuals? Is there a policy to actively acquire land on behalf of the
federal government? You know, there's another contention we've been dealing with out of this situation in Oregon, is the BLM does not go out. It doesn't take private land unless it is sold, you know, to the BLM. But
okay.
It's not our practice to – the BLM is not a land baron agency. In other words, no, we – If you, in fact, if you look at the amount of land the BLM manages today, it's actually decreased from over the last several years.
Now, how much land does the BLM manage on behalf of the federal government in Oregon?
200. Oh, in Oregon?
Right.
I should know that. I've got it in my notes, which are, I haven't unpacked my bag yet. But it is, honestly, it is about 60% of the county, anyway, in Oregon, of Harney County.
It's so the BLM manages about 60% of the land in Harney County on behalf of the federal government? Okay, I see.
And you know, it is not on behalf of the federal government. I want to be really clear about that. It is on behalf of the public.
Okay, I see.
There's a difference.
Okay, I understand. Now, how, if the federal government, the federal government that we're talking here, how do they go about acquiring land when it does happen? When they are able to purchase a piece of land, how what is that process like?
If let's say someone has a piece of private ground that they are going to sell, they may come to the BLM and ask if the BLM is interested in it. And if there are resources there that would benefit the public, then the BLM may purchase it. A lot of times we acquire land through exchanges, but it's really, in those cases, you know, you have a patchwork of ownership, mm-hmm. and it's sometimes difficult to manage. So you have an isolated parcel of land somewhere, and it's more difficult to manage that as an isolated parcel than to have it all with a continuous piece of property. But when we acquire it like that, it's most often acquired through an exchange, a trade with a landowner, so that they acquire, and it's just making the boundaries, the lines more contiguous rather than having separate parcels that you're trying to manage as a whole.
I see. Okay. Now, are private property owners, private landowners in Harney County or in other places in Oregon, are they ever encouraged to sell their land to the BLM or to the federal government for environmental reasons or maybe some other reason? Because this seems to be a contention that the Hammonds and some of these other ranchers have really sort of been harassed by the BLM and some other federal entities and told, hey, look, grazing this land is causing harm to the environment. It's damaging the ecosystem. It'd be better if you sold the land to us so we could manage it. Is that true at all?
That's patently false.
That's not true at all. Okay. So private landowners in Harney County, including the Hammonds, have never been encouraged or it's never been suggested that they give up their ranches and sell their ranches to the BLM in order to protect the environment. None of that. That's not true at all.
That is not true. You know, the Fish and Wildlife Service, in managing that refuge, which is one of the top refuges in the country, and if you talk to the Audubon Society and groups like that, I think through that they have maybe encouraged or looked at land that's contiguous to it that would add value to the refuge for the public.
Okay.
But I really can't speak to any of that because I'm not with the Fish and Wildlife Service. You would have to talk with them.
Right.
But okay. As far as, you know, honestly, it's very frustrating to me to hear those stories of the BLM is trying to force the ranchers off the land and take their ranch, which is just absolutely not true.
That's not true at all. Now, you're saying the BLM specifically is not doing this. Perhaps other entities or agencies could be attempting to do that. I guess you can't speak to that, obviously, but yeah, go ahead.
No, I do want to be really clear. What, and again, you'd have to talk to Fish and Wildlife, but nobody goes out to anybody that owns private land out there and tries to strong arm them out of their land. That just that's a pure myth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how are, because from what I understand, some of the land that the BLM manages, I mean, leases are granted to companies or maybe even private ranchers for grazing rights and stuff like that. But how are mining and logging leases, how are they granted, or how does that process work? Could you kind of walk us through that?
Well, the BLM has overall a little timberland. It's primarily rangeland, lower okay. elevation rangeland. And if you'd have to go back to 1934 and the Taylor Grazing Act, which set up grazing districts to allow private individuals to graze cattle on that land. And so those, and there are thousands of ranchers who graze on public land. It's one of the biggest programs we have. And the vast majority of them, you know, they may not get 100% what they want all the time, neither does the BLM. But what we do is sit down face-to-face with them and work out some of the finer points of those. But generally, overall, there is a permitting process, and it grants in separate allotments, and they're divided up into allotments that vary in size. Well, those ranchers are permitted to run their cows or livestock, whatever it may be, on that for a fee, which is it's a very, very low fee compared to leasing private ground. But there are some requirements. The ranchers maintain fences, in some cases water sites, and there are some rules about how many they can have on a particular piece of ground, and honestly, when they can turn those cows out and when they have to remove them. There are a lot of details like that that vary from permit to permit across the West.
Right.
But all of that is designed to maintain that ground in as healthy a condition as possible, for the rancher's benefit, for the public's benefit.
I understand. Now, so you're saying that in Harney County, there really isn't a lot of land that's managed by the BLM that is specifically for mining and logging. It's mostly for grazing cattle.
It is.
Okay. So to your knowledge, there's no major natural resources in Harney County that could be mined or otherwise exploited and sold for a profit?
I don't believe there's any mining, or it's certainly would be a minor amount of mining in Harney County.
Okay.
It is. It just happens to be. And, you know, there again, the BLM manages 243 million acres across the West. Mm-hmm. And in some areas, the predominant use is grazing. In some areas, the predominant use is recreation. Some areas, the predominant use may be mining. But regardless of what the predominant use is, there are other considerations, because, like I said, we have to manage them for multiple use.
Right.
And a lot of times those uses don't conflict necessarily. And in some areas, there's very little, say in Harney County, there's very little recreation uses, although there are some, and the BLM has campgrounds there and that, but it's predominantly ranching in that area.
Okay. Now, how are grazing permits granted? Are they granted on an annual basis? Is it every 5 years? Is it every 10 years? How does that process work?
You know, I would have to double check on that. I think they are annual.
Okay.
Based on an annual basis. And that most times ranchers who have permits, they end up being very long term. They hold them for years.
Okay. And of course, when you're granted a permit, and I'm sure there's some sort of application process, I'm also assuming that there are certain regulations and laws you have to abide by in order to continue, you know, with the grazing permit. I mean, if you break one of the rules, you're not going to be granted another grazing permit, I would assume. Is that kind of how it works?
Yes, it is.
Right.
I mean, if but I do want to stress that overall, if you look throughout the West, there, the vast majority of ranchers are just fine with the regulations, or they
right.
seem to be anyway, because really it's largely in their interest to have that land maintained in as healthy and productive a condition as possible.
Sure. Yeah, I understand. And then that makes sense. Now, with the Hammonds specifically, there's some allegations floating around that the BLM tried to deny their grazing permits. They tried to increase the fees for some of them over the years. Can you speak to that, to those allegations?
Well, number one, the fees are a flat fee for everybody everywhere. In fact, the BLM, no, they don't go in and single out a rancher and try and raise the fees. That just doesn't happen.
Okay.
The other parts of that question, I'm sorry.
I guess another question I have is, what is the process for revoking a grazing permit, or maybe increasing the fee if that happens? Or is that even a possibility to increase the fee on someone?
No, you'd have to go to Congress.
Okay.
And to change a fee.
So
it's a flat fee. It's been at $1.35 an AUM for really about as long as I can remember.
Okay. And the BLM couldn't just arbitrarily revoke someone's grazing permit for no reason. I mean, there would have to be a reason why they would not, you know, extend a grazing permit, or if they would end a contract that's existing.
Yes, we just cannot and don't arbitrarily remove anyone's permit.
Okay.
They would have to breach the agreement in some form or fashion. And yes, the BLM did deny renewing the Hammonds just in the last year, but not until they were tried and convicted.
Now, is this the first time this has ever happened to the Hammonds? Have they had their either water rights or grazing rights terminated or suspended in the past, or is this the first time this has happened?
Well, you got to understand the situation with the Hammonds, and I will say the Hammonds are very well thought of in Burns, and they have been very upstanding citizens. This isn't about the Hammonds, and I think if you asked every single person in the BLM in Oregon, they would tell you this is not about the Hammonds as people. It's about their actions. And there have been several incidences over many years. It wasn't like, I've seen so much reporting that this was a single incident where they had a fire get away that burned 130 acres of public land. And that's what this is all about. It's not just about that. We're talking about the same issue that was recurring and recurring for several years. Ultimately,
okay.
They were only convicted for fires in 2001 and 2006.
But what you're saying is that there were other instances of them either violating some of these rules or policies?
Correct.
Okay.
And now, the water right issue that has been talked about is there, that water right is actually on the Fish and Wildlife Service property, and but the Hammonds had been using it. And you, again, you'd have to talk to Fish and Wildlife Service about this, but as I understand it, that spring was on Fish and Wildlife public property, and when they fenced the refuge, it prevented, you know, by default, I guess, the Hammonds from using that site that was on, is on public property.
And now this was going back to 1994, correct? August 1994. It's claimed that the BLM, working with the Fish and Wildlife Service, two obviously federal entities, were building a fence around one of the Hammonds' water source. And so you're saying that the Hammonds' water source was actually on public land, which is why the fence was going around it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, they didn't specifically, to my understanding, did not specifically just fence off that water source. They were in the process of fencing the entire refuge.
I see, okay.
And honestly, okay, the BLM had no involvement in that at all.
Right, okay. Now, could you talk about some of the violations that the Hammonds committed? I mean, most people are familiar with the fire in 2001 and then again in 2006. The one in 2001, this was a fire that Stephen Hammond set, correct? And it started off on their private property, but it spread to roughly 130 acres of federal land. Is that right?
Well, that's my understanding. And if you have not, if you've not seen the U.S. attorneys, he wrote, he has a statement that was published as an op-ed, and it really goes through that whole whole process of those convictions, what they were tried for.
Now, you're referring to, is it U.S. Attorney Frank Papagni?
Yes.
Okay, I'll have to see if I can find that.
Well, if you can't, I would be more than happy to email it to you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, I'm online right now. Frank Papagni. It was an op-ed. What would I search for if I were to find it?
Probably U.S. attorney statement, and it was published in actually the local paper in Burns, which is the something Herald.
Okay, let's see. Okay, well, yeah. If I can't find it, well, that'd be great if you could return it. Let's see. Or if you could email it to me. Background: U.S. attorney issued press release on Hammond case in October and December. Okay, I think I found it right here. Okay,
it would have been around mid-December, the week of the 14th, I believe.
Yes, I see it right here. Yep. Now, so in 2001, the fire spread to, it was a regular fire, and from what I understand, and maybe you can clarify this, these burns that these ranchers do on their land, it's actually to maintain the health of the land, correct, and sort of rejuvenate it. It's something that has been going on for generations. It's sort of a natural way to deal with and maintain the land. Could you speak to that?
Well, it is something that even the BLM, the Forest Service, even the Land Management Agency, conducts prescribed fires. The difference is when we do it, it's under very strict conditions. And we never do it when it's not coordinated with, there are multiple examples of us doing prescribed burning alongside ranchers or other, primarily ranchers, where we work together on those, and it's all coordinated. The problem with going out there and just starting those fires, which they are more than welcome to do on their private ground, but when it escapes, you're putting, in some cases, lives in danger.
Right. Now, in 2001, it's alleged that before he even lit the fire on his private land, he informed the local fire department, I'm assuming. I don't know if you can confirm that or if you know anything about that.
Well, I can say that there was fire in the area. There was a burn ban on because of the severe fire conditions. And when, and I believe this is all part of the case, he did not call and say that they were going to burn that until two hours later. It wasn't like they called prior to igniting it.
Oh, I see. Okay, so he called and informed them after he had already started it.
Right.
I see. Okay. Now, in this fire in 2001 that Stephen Hammond lit on his own private land, and then it spilled over and burned some public land, roughly 127 acres. What happened as a result of this? Did the BLM cite him, or did any federal entity reprimand or enforce anything against him at this point?
You know, I don't know if it was that particular instance, but there were instances where the BLM did let him know that his permits were in jeopardy if he continued to do a variety of things, primarily fires.
Okay, I see. Now, there was another fire in 2006, and this is the one that seems to be causing the most controversy, because from what I understand, and I hope you can clarify this, there was a fire that was started in the area in Harney County near the Hammonds Ranch. It was caused by a lightning strike, and Stephen Hammond again set what they call a backfire on his own private property. And apparently, these backfires are ways that are there ways to combat other fires. And I don't know all the details. I mean, I'm not a rancher, so maybe you could clarify this for us. Could you talk about this fire in 2006 and what happened there?
You know, I really can't go into many details that would be available in all the court documents.
Okay.
But I will say that, and I believe it was that fire that did entrap some BLM firefighters that were in the area fighting the fire that was going on.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it entrapped some BLM firefighters, you're saying. The fire that Stephen Hammond set in 2006.
Right. And the backfire. That is the problem with doing it without any communication or coordination.
I see.
Entrapped is maybe too strong a word, because that has a very specific connotation in the fire world. But it did threaten some firefighters.
But to your knowledge, the fires that the Hammonds have set, you know, not only in 2001 but also in 2006 and perhaps other fires, to your knowledge, none of this was done maliciously to harm the BLM or to harm the land. It was done with good intentions and good purposes, although it may have been a bit misguided and sort of irresponsible. Is that a fair characterization?
I wouldn't even begin to speculate on what they were thinking.
Okay. Now, in 2006, this 2006 fire, this quote-unquote backfire, the very next day, from my understanding, the timeline that I have, BLM officials went to the county sheriff and asked that the Hammonds be arrested and prosecuted, and they were brought up on state charges, and these charges were dropped. Is that correct?
I don't know. I can't speak to that level of detail.
Okay. From what I understand, that is correct, and I'd like to clarify that. Perhaps you can't do that. Maybe I'd have to speak with somebody else. But then in 2011, this was when the U.S. attorney got involved and charged Dwight and Stephen under this anti-terrorism federal law. You know, it wasn't, they weren't charging him at the state level now. This was a federal case. Is that correct, to your knowledge?
Well, let me clarify. No one ever considered them terrorists. No one in the BLM ever called them terrorists. I think in one of the sentencings, the judge may have compared it. I don't know. You have to look into that. But I can tell you unequivocally that the BLM does not consider them terrorists, never did, never called them terrorists. Once it was investigated with the BLM, then it goes to the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. And it's at that level in justice when they make that determination. And honestly, they were convicted of arson. Whether it happened to be under some change, there's been a whole lot of change in the law since 9/11. And if it happened to fall, if that there, that arson happened to fall under that, it was only because it fell under that. They were not tried as terrorists.
And right.
This whole thing in Harney County, I'll tell you right now, is there's so much misinformation out there, so much absolutely patently false information out there, that no one in the BLM conspiracies. There were BLM employees who went over and helped the Hammonds shovel snow when I was over there in December.
Mm-hmm.
They've never been called terrorists.
Okay, no, I understand, and I do thank you for clarifying all this. I guess my point is, though, is they were charged under this anti-terrorism law, right? That's really what I'm not saying that you guys are calling them terrorists or anything like that. I'm just saying that they were prosecuted by the federal prosecutor, this Frank Papagni, under this anti-terrorism law, and that's what they were convicted under.
When I look at the court documents that I've seen, it does not, it's arson. And anything beyond that, you would have to talk to the U.S. attorney.
Okay. Now, I'm curious, to your knowledge, were the Hammonds, was their home ever raided by anyone, by any entity of the federal government, including the BLM or maybe some other entity? Was their home ever raided?
I don't know. I cannot imagine that their home was raided.
Okay, so to your knowledge, their home was not raided.
I don't know.
Okay.
And so I can't speak to that. But what I can say is, people, and I'm getting the sense that you are very right-leaning in your work, and that... that's just not the way the BLM operates.
Well,
no matter what, my
political persuasions are pretty irrelevant at this point. I'm just trying to get the facts, really. That's all I'm concerned about. I just want to, I've heard their story. I want to hear what the BLM has to say and what the federal government has to say, because I want to confirm. I mean, if this outline that I'm reading right here, this is from the BundyRanch.blogspot.com. It's all over the internet. If this timeline is accurate and we can confirm all this, what happened to the Hammonds does seem pretty outrageous. I'm not saying exactly everything that I'm reading here is true. That's why I'm trying to get this clarified by people like you.
Well, I will say this. Even people inside the BLM maybe think that it was the 5 years maybe was more than it needed to be. But that's not the BLM's call.
Right.
The BLM doesn't...
Right.
And that is another misperception out there or misinformation, is the BLM doesn't make that call. And, if you're asking me personally, yeah, 5 years maybe is a long time. But on the other hand, you have to consider that there had been issues over a long period of time. And I really, it's not for me to say, it's not for anyone in the BLM to say.
Yeah, and that was another question I had, because it's being alleged that, well, I guess let me first say that in 2011 when they were retried, essentially, because originally they were charged with, from what I understand, state crimes, and those were dropped. When the federal prosecutor brought up charges against them in 2011, 5 years later, it was under this anti-terrorism statute, and they were found guilty. Dwight went to jail for 3 months, and Stephen went to jail for 1 year. They were in federal prison for those periods of time. And the minimum sentence under this law was 5 years. So I guess there's a lot of people have an issue with the fact that these gentlemen were sentenced, they were found guilty, they did their time, they get out, and then 6 months after they get out, basically, the federal prosecutor, and it's also being alleged that a BLM employee, Rhonda Cargis, who was the field manager for the BLM in the Burns region, and then her husband, who worked at this wildlife refuge, it's being alleged that this husband and wife couple teamed up with the federal prosecutor to bring these charges back up and to appeal the decision and demand that the Hammonds go to prison for the full 5 years. Could you confirm any of that or address that? Because the gentleman I spoke with yesterday at the BLM said that none of that is true, that this was basically the prosecutor's decision and the BLM had nothing to do with this.
That is the prosecutor's decision at that point. The BLM was completely out of that picture.
Okay.
Once it went to the U.S. Attorney and the Department of Justice, the BLM was not the driving force to send them back to serve the minimum. They were sentenced by a lower court judge because he personally thought that the five-year minimum, and there's like a national conversation about minimum sentences right now because they don't allow for particular circumstances. They're just hard, set. But once it went to the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Land Management had nothing to do with anything that happened beyond that.
I see. Okay. Well, that's good to know, because that has been alleged that there was a BLM employee and her husband. It's sort of alleged that they were collaborating with the federal attorney, this Frank Papagni, to bring these charges, to essentially appeal the first decision and to force these men to go back into prison for the full 5 years, and also to work out some sort of deal that, you know, the Hammonds not only had to pay the BLM a huge fine, I believe it was close to $400,000, but also if the Hammonds were going to sell their ranch, they had to sell it to the BLM. That's been another contention. Does that ever happen, you know, where the BLM is basically making deals to, I don't want to say force people to sell their land, but to cut a deal to where if they are going to sell it, it has to be to the federal government. Does that ever happen, or can you speak to that contention?
I will say this. When the Hammonds, and, you know, I maybe you shouldn't even go here because I was not personally involved in those, but the point of giving the BLM the first right of refusal if they had to sell any part of their land, which honestly would have amounted to a minuscule number of acres to pay that bill based on the going rate. It wasn't like the BLM had the first right of refusal for their whole ranch.
I see. Okay. They just worked out the deal to where the Hammonds, if they were going to sell any land, it would just be enough to cover the fines that they owed the BLM?
Correct.
Okay, I see. So it wasn't as if they were trying to take over all of their property or something like that?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
And honestly, the BLM really wasn't even interested in what the offer was, you know, to give them the first right of refusal. But, you know, that's old news. That expired. They paid their fine, which I got to throw in here that the fine was to cover the cost of fighting the fire. And
okay,
no matter where you are, if you cause a wildfire, it happens all the time. People who are found to be responsible for that are billed for the cost of fighting that fire. It's almost
right.
Fair to the American taxpayer.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that totally makes sense. Yeah. So, okay, and go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that there is just so much misinformation out there that really is not looking at a larger picture.
Right. Well, I want to thank you very much. I mean, you did really clarify a lot of these issues. And just, I guess, one final question, just to be totally clear. The decision by the federal prosecutor to appeal the original decision after these two men had gone to prison and done their time and they got out, the decision to appeal and to demand that these men go back to prison for the full 5-year sentence, this was a decision made strictly by the federal attorney. The BLM had nothing to do with this decision.
Right. The BLM has no role in that. Once it moves into the realm of the Department of Justice, U.S. Attorney, that's a whole different realm, and it's not driven by the BLM. The BLM did not make that decision. No. You'd have to talk to the U.S. Attorney about that.
Okay, very good. And then just to wrap up, what is the, I mean, generally speaking, I'm wondering if you could comment on the general relationship that private ranchers have with entities like the BLM or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I mean, is there some animosity, or is it, generally speaking, a very collaborative and productive relationship?
By and large, vast majority of situations, it's collaborative and cooperative. Now, that's not to say that there isn't some contention along the way, because, you know, the ranchers want to manage their land as ranching land. The BLM, by law, has a mission to manage it for multiple uses and to manage it in a way that the results in the most productive and sustainable landscapes.
I see.
And so naturally, yeah, in many of those cases, whether it's ranchers, whether it's recreationists, whether it's birders, hunters, it's rare that somebody gets everything they want. There has to be some balance and give and take there to achieve the best and healthiest and most productive landscapes for everyone.
Sure.
Not just one group.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Randy,
if you look across the border in Idaho, you'll find ranchers that have some animosity toward the BLM, but you'll also find ranchers that are very close partners with the BLM.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you'll find that, I think, everywhere the BLM has any land.
Right.
Yeah. And if I may, before we go, this claim that they have a video that proves that the BLM ignited the fire that ultimately led to the Hammond sliding the backfire, and as it, though the BLM just indiscriminately burns land. When you see that, and I don't know if it's the same one that they have been spreading far and wide, but I have seen this video multiple times, and I don't know that it's the same one they're talking about. But it does show BLM firefighters with drip torches, and then it cuts to some cows that have been scorched. Well, I think any reasonable person that looks at that would understand that that's just a small slice of the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really look at that. I mean, number one, the contention that the BLM... Here's kind of the stuff that we're dealing with. There was a woman at the community meeting there. I'm not sure it's there. I've seen so much of stuff lately. But I did see an interview with a woman who claimed that the BLM maintains the ground along highways and byways to look good, but you get back a mile and we have scorched, we have a scorched earth policy. So we just burn everything. And honestly, that's nuts. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. And for anybody to claim that they have a video that shows that we indiscriminately burn things, I'll be honest, is an extremely offensive insult to every wildland firefighter that goes out and puts their life on the line every year, every fire, to protect people's homes and property and the landscape and even cattle. I spent a number of years in on the operational side of fire, and we would use aircraft in the air to locate cows and livestock, and firefighters on the ground to help the ranchers move those animals out of the way of the fire. You got to understand too, though, there's no doubt that some of those animals perish in fires, and partly because we can't be everywhere all the time, and partly because range fires sometimes burn so fast and spread so rapidly that it does occasionally catch animals. But to presume or accuse the BLM of purposely doing that it's absurd.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for all the information. I really do appreciate it, and I'm sure many of our readers and listeners will certainly appreciate, you know, hearing you know, your side of the story, because I think you're right. I think that there definitely is a lot of misinformation and disinformation about this case, and really I just want to get to the bottom of it and hear both sides and see what can be done. I think that I'm hoping anyways that there's going to be some sort of resolution to this standoff, to this crisis, and I think you know, cooler heads will prevail at some point. So I just want to thank you for the time, you know, for answering these questions. I really appreciate it, and I think you provided a lot of clarity on a lot of these issues.
Well, I appreciate, you know, I really do appreciate you looking at both sides, because not everyone does.
Right. Now,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Okay, well, thank you very much, Randy. I will be in touch with you soon, and I will get this posted so people can hear both sides, as we talked about.
Great. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thanks.